Hey, welcome into our Housecast for Monday, July 23rd, 2018. Big Jim and Aaron V with you this morning. Ryan Wade on our guest, Dan Two Dogs Hampton. A pilot of some renown. Actually, this pilot, when he was over during Iraq and stuff, was legendary. Still is. Dude is an absolute beast, man.
4,000 hours, 726 of them in combat in an F-16.
Wild Weasel extraordinaire. The Wild Weasel dudes would go out and get the anti-aircraft. Yeah, that's what he did. He's in like a complete master at that. Huge proponent of the F-16s and all that. But he's written a book called Chasing the Demon about breaking the speed of sound and who really did it. Going back to the whole time in the 40s out at Edwards Air Force Base in California, the X-1, you know, the orange one with Chuck Yeager that we all know. He claims that it wasn't Chuck that broke the speed of sound. A guy named George Welch that did it before him. But because, we'll let him tell the story, but basically it has to do with he was from the wrong branch of the service. They wanted the Air Force to do it. I'm not surprised by this. If it's true, I'm not surprised by this.
I'm sure it is.
Well, it'd be interesting to see. There's a couple questions I got about this. We'll get him to tell the story. But if you don't know, in the aircraft industry and in the military, one of the things, and they still do it to this day, is they compete for contracts. So Northrop, where he calls it North American back in the day, had built one plane. And then you had the X-1, which I think was Lockheed. So you build both of them, and then they take one. So they took the X-1. But Northrop had one that worked as well. My mom actually worked for Chuck Yeager for a little while when I was growing up. She was a secretary for him, one of many, at Edwards Air Force Base out in California. This plane called the F-20 Tiger Shark that was supposed to go up against the F-16. And Yeager would fly it. My mom would go out there. And as a kid, I would actually be able to go out to Edwards Air Force Base and see things like the flying wing in these hangars out there. Oof. And when I was a kid, at one point, my mom goes, wait. And we sat there and watched an SR-71 come out of a hangar and take off. Goes about halfway down the runway, goes straight up, and the car shook. Just boom, 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 gone.
Well, even here locally, I live close to Selfridge, and I love it.
Oh, yeah. I could sit there, maybe because I'm a big, doofy dude. I am obsessed with A-10s. I think A-10s are the coolest. How they fly, I have no idea. Just the name Warthog, too. They're the baddest planes in the world. All right, we got a man. Dan Hampton, how are you, buddy?
Hey, good morning.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's an honor. Two dogs here. So we were just talking about airplanes. So you know, my mom worked for Chuck Yeager for a couple of years out at Edwards Air Force Base on the F-20. She was a secretary for him.
No kidding. Did she like him?
She did, actually. You know, and I was a kid. I got a chance to go out there a couple times. I never met him, but she always worked with him. And it's interesting, your book, Chasing the Demon. I mention all that because there's one thing I want to talk about and what you mentioned in the book. First of all, explain to everybody, Dan, in your mind and what you know, who broke the sound barrier?
In my opinion, and again, it's an opinion. I have no hard data, but it was George Welch. He was a test pilot, formerly an Army fighter pilot, who became a test pilot for North American. And it isn't just me. There's quite a few people. And you know, when General Yeager's confronted with this, rightfully so, he says, "Well, show me the proof. Show me the paperwork." And there isn't any. But the description of the events that I put in the book, and again, my own subjective opinion as a fighter pilot, is that Welch did it first. And it's no reflection on Yeager. Welch just, I think, beat him to it by 2 weeks.
So you say in the book, though, one thing to explain this, though, but George took the and told Pancho, the lady at the Happy Bottom Riding Club, hey, listen, for this big boom, and then pointed the plane when he was testing it at the Happy Bottom Riding Club. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And I've been over that test range many times. It's not that way anymore, but I can definitely see how it used to be. The only green spot in the dry lake was the little oasis where Pancho had her place. And it wasn't really Pancho that he told. It was one of her hostesses. And I use that term loosely.
Air quotes.
It was a different military back then, probably a better one. But he told her, hey, look, at this time, you listen for this. This is what's going to happen. And Welch knew about the sonic booms, because exceeding the speed of sound was really no big deal. The Germans had been doing it for years with V-2 rockets. So it was just getting to do it in an aircraft that was going to be the big deal. And Welch was pretty certain after, because he was an engineer himself, after talking to engineers and knowing about the V-2, that this is what would happen. So he knew that if he pointed this XP-86 at this spot at this time, that the sound wave, the shock wave, would propagate down towards the green area, and that's what everybody would hear, and they might even see some evidence, which they did, of broken windows, and that's what happened.
And if you go online real quick, I'm sorry, Aaron, if you go online and just type in Happy Bottom Riding Club, Chuck Yeager, there are hundreds of pictures of Chuck hanging out there. I mean, it was even part of the movie The Right Stuff, right, where they're hanging out having drinks?
Absolutely, okay. And why wouldn't you? Because that's the only, unless you want to drive back over the San Gabriels into Los Angeles, where else are you going to go?
Well, that's my point.
You got a bunch of...
Yeah, Dan, that's my point, though, is like to, which I kind of am giving you even more credibility with this, because Chuck went there all the time. There's no way he didn't know. I believe you, and Aaron, I both say we believe you, and I think it's not a knock on Chuck Yeager, but I'm pretty damn sure he knew pretty quick that George had broken the sound barrier.
I think he did too. There's, as I said in the book, there were no open secrets. I mean, they were all open secrets. There were no secrets. The Happy Bottom Club was really the only place to go. And these guys, you know, they'd all been through World War II. They had all been years, you know, in the hole, so to speak. And so when they needed to relax, they were going to relax, and they drank hard and partied hard. And the only place to do it was Poncho's place. Fascinating woman in her own right, but yeah. Everybody knew what was going on. And I've been in closed little insular fighter communities like that. And it's true. No, there are no secrets. Everybody knows what's going on.
But why did it take so long for it to come out?
Well, politics. The Air Force had just become the Air Force the month before in September of 1947. And the new Secretary of the Air Force wanted to show the world, and especially the Army and the Navy, that in fact the Air Force needed to be its own service and that they were justified in allocating, you know, huge amounts of money for it. And what better way to do that than to say, look what we did right away. We exceeded the speed of sound. And North American aviation was pretty much told point blank, you will not break the sound barrier first. And if you do, nobody ever better hear about it. And North American, you know, it's a business. They were quite happy to say, yeah, we don't care. We want the millions and billions, it turned out to be, dollars worth of government contracts to build aircraft. We're not going to jeopardize that to say we broke the sound barrier first. You go right ahead. And that's what happened.
It's a great book, man. I just started. I downloaded it. Well, it comes out tomorrow. I'm waiting for it, dude. I'm waiting
well,
for this one.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Write me a good review.
Okay, yeah, we'll do that one. Got a question for you. Since we have a Dan Two Dogs Hampton on the phone here, the book Chasing the Demon comes out tomorrow, as a matter of fact. I've always wondered, and you being such a fighter pilot, remember when the SR-71 was retired? It sure seemed like, okay, the U-2 got shot down. They built the SR-71 so they could still do what they wanted to do. And then all of a sudden, the SR-71 just is retired one day. I've always thought there was another plane that we just don't know about, because there's no way you would retire a plane that badass that still served a function or a purpose without a capable replacement.
That's very true. If you want me to tell you what it is, though, I'm not, because I don't want people with little plastic ID cards to come get me in the middle of the night.
So are these the planes that we'd always hear about flying out of England?
Lots of places. And when when it comes right down to it, it sounds kind of trite to say it, but you don't really want to know. Nobody really wants to know. All you want to know is that you're safe at night, right?
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about. I mean, I appreciate the fascination with the airplane and different things, and people want to solve mysteries, and that's okay. But they have to remember that these projects are being done for very good and sufficient reasons, namely so that we always know more than the bad guys and can do something about it when we have to. So, you know, I would tell everybody to sleep well at night. You're in good hands, regardless of what, you know, comes across on TV or in some other places.
It's good to hear.
It is good to know.
It's good to hear, Dan.
They've got our back. It's okay.
Before we let you go, one last question, because I'm obsessed with drones, and they seem to be used more and more, and not so much taking the place of what manned aircraft used to do, but at some point, do you think that's the direction military is going to go with unmanned aircraft?
No, and I'll tell you why. Would you get into an airliner without a pilot?
No.
No.
Okay, and that's an airliner that takes off from point A and flies to point B and lands. It's pretty non-dramatic. You're not gonna trust a real combat mission in the air to a drone. They can't do it technically right now anyway. They're great for surveillance. Don't get me wrong. I love them for that. I love to use them as bait for surface-to-air missiles so they shoot at them first and not me.
Right on.
That's fine. No, those are all good uses of drones. But the reason they've become so popular in the last decade, 15 years actually, is we haven't had an enemy to fight that fights back in the air. The last one was Iraq, and we went through them in 30 days. So, you know, unless we end up fighting against somebody that has fighters and SAMs again, the drones have been fine over Afghanistan and mostly pacified Iraq because nobody can shoot them down. But you go into a real combat situation, a real battle like I was accustomed to, and the drones don't last long at all. I watched five of them go down in one day.
Dan.
So, yeah. You know, they all have their places and they all have their uses. I don't buy the let's get rid of one for another argument in most cases.
Dan, it's an honor talking to you. I do have to ask. I know the Navy pilots do this all the time. Did the Air Force guys? Did you ever oil up and tape your hands and play beach volleyball like in Top Gun?
Only with mirrored sunglasses.
Okay. That's the key. I keep forgetting. That's the key. Okay.
Actually, the best part of that movie, the most realistic part of that movie, was the bar scene. The Miramar O Club was really like that.
Seriously?
It's not there anymore, but yeah, it was really like that.
Okay.
So it was a good place. I wish it was still around.
All right. Hey, Chasing the Demon is out tomorrow everywhere you can get books. I've already pre-ordered on my Kindle, man. Cannot wait to read this. Dan Two Dogs Hampton, it's an honor talking to you.
My pleasure, and thanks again for having me.
All right, thanks. There he goes, Dan Hampton. Neat guy.
Fascinating.
Yeah, the greenhouse, I won't talk submarine stuff all day, but I thought this was interesting. Ever wonder where, you remember the old Hunt for October movie and the guy that wrote all these books, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know what he did before he wrote all those books?
Hung out in a bar?
He was an insurance adjuster in Ohio who decided he had an interest in submarines, and he went down there and went to a bar and got the Navy guys drunk, and they started telling stories. And when that came out, everybody went, wait a minute. So, yeah, it was almost too close. So, like, when they filmed the movie Hunt for October, they had to go back and edit some of it. The Navy went, no, you can't show that.
That's still one of my favorite movies, though.
Things on submarines don't react well to bullets.
Well, think about it. Just like you said, there has to be an idea behind every book and every film, and it has to come from somewhere. So there is some reality to some of these situations.
Are you talking about the Caterpillar drive on the Russian submarine, the whole idea?
All of it.
No comment.
Exactly.
No comment.
Well, and that's the thing. I have another friend who also we've talked about this. He was also
on. Move that cup. You're going to hurt yourself.
I know. That's like the fourth time I've hit it. But he also was on classified missions on submarines, and he doesn't talk a lot about it. But he'll make comments every once in a while and go, wow, that's a little too realistic.
Yeah. It's if you've never Hunt for October, it's cool. And then Dan, also, if you're into Air Force stuff, the other book I just downloaded him from is Viper. It talks about his
times. Career. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely muy macho. So.
But drones, that's fascinating what he said. I've always wondered about that.
There's a movie called, we should wrap this up, Eye in the Sky, came out a couple of years ago. It's an ethical dilemma. English and American UAV operators, drone operators,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about, Ellen Mirren is in it as a British operative for the
amazing.
Military. They know this terrorist is building bombs in this building. However, it's in a country that they are not currently at war with, and the whole area is populated by civilians around it.
So do
they take out the person? Yeah, I won't tell you anything else, but it's really an interesting thing about drones. Yeah, it's called Eye in the Sky. I think I've got it on like Netflix or something. You can check it out. So, all right, Dan Hampton, there we go. I'm glad he said something about the SR-71 too. Always wondered.